Welcome to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
Hey Al, you ready? Let's do it.
Your Mackay Finals Rugby League experience, good or bad?
We didn't run out of alcohol, so that's always a good win for the whole weekend. So that was a good start.
All right. We'll
delve into it.
That's all you can hope for, going on their track record.
It was good. It was real good. And we somehow jagged the same spot for both nights. So I was in exactly the same seat for both nights, as you can probably tell from the photos I sent you.
Yeah, no, not bad seats at all. Like, honestly, is there a bad seat in the house?
No, not really. Except if you're on either end. But if you're on either end, they had this real decent sort of scaffolding, literally even up on the hill. So they obviously anticipated that they were going to get these two games, or they got word that they might get these two games. So they did good. Mackay did good.
A gracious host, Mackay, for what was NRL Finals Week 2, I guess, which was a broad spectrum of both games. I think there was a bit of a butt whooping in the first one, and then the second one, holy moly, like just not the type of game that you would have expected out of Penrith and Parramatta.
No, it was a slugfest. It was definitely a slugfest. It went right down.
It was a good old fashioned slobber knocker.
Well, we'll get into the first game. So the Friday night game was indeed Manly trouncing the Roosters 42-6. Firstly, I guess straight up, you could just see this was the first time. Yeah, so Roosters, this is the third time the Roosters have played here this year. For Manly, it was the first time. You wouldn't have told. I mean, look, the one person that's from here and of all these teams is Daly Cher Evans. He's played on these fields before. Not that that should make any disadvantage or advantage, but he knew, I guess, just from that get-go, he knew to sort of what he was facing in the Roosters' back line, and they were able just to move the ball ultra quickly. I mean, you got Tom Dvojevic just sort of sliding. God damn, that guy's just even in warm up. When I was watching him warm up, holy hell, he's a beast unto his own.
He's a large human. Mm. He's a large human. It's just your non prototypical type fullback. Like, you know, he looks like he could play in the second row.
He could. I honestly believe, just looking at him, he could play every single position. Even when he sort of passed the ball, he's got decent hands. I mean, I haven't seen a kicking game out of him. So, but yeah, probably except for dummy half. I don't know if he can get those big tree trunks down low enough to sort of pass the ball.
Yeah, you'd think dummy half. If you're a tall dummy half, then you're behind the eight ball to start with. You're gonna have a really bad back by the time your career's over.
Yeah. You'll be in constant back surgeries for the rest of your life. But you'd
be a hunchback by the time you're 35.
I don't think there's ever been a tall dummy half ever. I mean, that's probably the whole point.
I mean, it just wouldn't make any sense, really, would it?
Because you've got to get down quick enough to have somebody. Sort of get the ball.
You've got to have a decent low center of gravity.
You do.
He's a little bit of a protected species too, I think. At this sort of stage in the year, the early play that happened and the hit by Matt Ikavalu on Trbojevic as he scored in the corner, you know, with. I thought it was a late hit, I mean, not really. I don't think so. I don't know what you thought there at the ground, but I didn't really sort of like the precedence of what they'd set there with the late hit on Trbojevic. It's like, oh, okay, like he's going to command a lot of attention. Oh, we understand that, but it's rugby league. You're going to get hit. It's played at a frenetic pace. You're going to get hit. You pass, you challenge the line, you're going to get hit, whether you pass the ball or whether you don't pass the ball. So I didn't really like the way that they'd sort of set the precedence on how this game started. And then basically it straight after that, the Roosters kick out on the full, like after that try. So it just, you think, this isn't going to be one of these nights, is it? And it just, what, they got blown off the park in the first half.
They did. And like you said, after that kick out in the fall, Manly just literally took the ascendancy to them, you know, on the back of their halves, on the back of Kieran Foran and Daly Sherry Evans.
Well, they camped in the Roosters 20.
Yeah, they did.
They were pitching a tent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were pitching a tent, so to speak. Maybe not the right choice of words, but close enough. But they were.
That's what I was going for.
They were camped down there, is probably what you should have said.
They were pitching a tent.
Honestly, in saying that they were sort of camped down there, it felt like they were repelled a lot. Don't get me wrong, they were fairly repelled.
Oh, absolutely. Look, yeah.
There was three tries.
The Roosters aren't a poor defensive team. Yeah, they've showed you that. They've showed you that all year. And this is one of the biggest scores that's been put on them this whole season. So it just, you know, whether or not they've just finally run out of legs.
It felt like that's how it come across, is that they just, the injuries that they had all year just piled up, and it just became that they run their course. Literally, that's how it came across.
You would have thought this would have happened, you know, towards the back end of the season, you know, towards the end of the regular season, but they continued to charge on and continued to win. Like you said, you know, continued to win in Mackay. I thought their offensive plans was a little too one dimensional. You could see a lot of times they're running down Manly's right hand defense. They're trying to target Morgan Harper and Jason Saab, like Melbourne did last week. I thought they tried to sort of take a bit of the leaf out of, you know, a leaf out of the Melbourne Storm book to try and run them off. Yeah. It didn't really work. I thought that, their fifth tackle options were pretty poor most of the night. I found myself scratching my head on the jersey swap. Like, Hutchison has been playing the six and Lamb's been playing the seven with Walker coming off the bench. Why now are we putting Hutchison in the seven and Lamb in the six? Like, their roles didn't change throughout the game. I don't know what sort of, you know, smoke and mirrors that's trying to create. You know what I mean? It didn't make any sense why to swap those jersey numbers. Just continue with what you're doing. You know, Walker came off the bench again. He probably got injected a little bit too late in the game. The game was probably too far gone for him, you know, for him to sort of try and come in and be, you know, his creative self. Mm-hmm. I think it was too late by the time he got on there. Three or four times the Roosters kicking game, you know, the ball had either gone dead or it was caught in the in goal. Like when they were in Manly's 20, that were just the execution just wasn't there, and that was just you could just see the season for them slipping away as time went on.
Drew Hutchison just was very one dimensional, as you sort of said the halves, but it was Drew Hutchison in this game.
I like what he does. I like he's a good calming influence and a good ball playing 5'8", and he's got a super solid kicking game. But he needs that combination there with him and Sam Walker, I think, is the way forward, not him and Lachlan Lamb. You know, Sam Walker provides that little bit more creativity, that little bit more spark, whereas Hutchison has got a big boot, you know, a big left boot, and he's a good controlling sort of 5'8". Whereas, yeah, Sam Walker will threaten you a lot more in, you know, inside that 20-meter zone rather than what Drew Hutchison would.
Because he runs the ball. Like Lachlan Lamb, they both played about 40 minutes. Lachlan Lamb had one run for 14 meters, and Sam had 11 runs for 64 meters. So that just is, yeah, exactly. I think that is the way going forward. I'm still perplexed that they started doing this towards the end of the year, you know, getting Sam Walker coming off the bench. Because, again, they did it here. Both the time they come off the bench, you could see the change in the team. It was completely different in a good way.
No, that's right. I guess if he's affecting the game in a positive way in that regard, then I mean you may as well keep trying to do it. But the only problem is when your plan goes south and it's not working, then it's not so much that it's too late. You inject him into the game, and then you're just like, oh, you know, all right, go out there and the pressure's on. Whereas the last few weeks, he hasn't really been getting a whole lot of minutes. He's been coming on at the back end of the game. Now he had to sort of be injected in that first half, and it's basically, go on, kid, go out there and try and dig us out of this hole. You and Tedesco, you know, you got to try and dig us out of this hole. And I don't think that's very fair on him.
No, that's exactly
and
right.
And the other thing too, you know, you've got Dylan Walker, who's coming off the bench for Manly, which I sort of like the way that they're using him as a utility as of late. He's got, you know, he's got a boatload of first grade experience. He can, you know, he can sort of drift in and out of the game. Whereas, you know, you've got Walker there. Sam Walker. He's only young, and the pressure might get to him.
Yeah, Dylan was for Manly. He was great.
I like what they do with him off the bench.
In the halves, yeah. You know, it was good. And I mean, he got that try, that really good try, which he only had. You could just tell because that was down our end. He only had eyes. You could tell he was going to dummy. He only had eyes for the try line. No one else was taking that try off him. You could absolutely tell he was going for that try.
Well, they go bang bang as soon as the second half starts.
Yeah,
and,
well, Tom,
you know,
Tom's
it was 24-6 at halftime.
Yeah.
And once Manly put those two tries on, it put the game really out of reach for the Roosters. And it's the game. I thought the game sort of stagnated a bit after that. Like I think that obviously the writing was on the wall that, you know, the Roosters, this was just an absolute bridge too far for them to climb to try and get back into this game. And, you know, tension sort of flared up. I guess, I don't know if you've seen, there was an article written that, was it Victor Radley? That I think it was towards the end of the game, and there must have been some chirping going on, and he's like, don't effing start me, you know, nasty C word, and it was caught all on the referee's microphone, and it's just like, yeah, right, I'm glad the game didn't get out of hand in that regard, because when it's a butt whooping like that, it sometimes, you know, when you've got fiery characters like him, like Angus Crichton in the team, they could essentially lose their mind a little bit and have some brain farts.
He was just passing it.
And cost their team next year, you know, by doing something silly and being suspended for next year.
He was just passing it. I could just tell, like, that very, very final play, which you wouldn't have probably seen, but that very final play where Sam Walker kicked the ball out and the game was over, Radley was going off at him because, like, you know, they were 20 metres out that they could have had a chance to score. Yes, the game was over and Radley was just going off.
To me, that doesn't make any sense. I understand the passion and everything.
Passion.
It's not as if it's a regular season game. It's not as if there's a final spot on the line if we only lose by 32. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's just... there's nothing wrong with conceding defeat, and especially when the scoreline is 42-6.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Do you know what I mean? He was
not happy. He was not happy.
He's just as much responsible for that loss as everybody else.
Yeah, that's true. That
Do you know what I mean? To see that at the end of the game, it's just what are you achieving by doing that to the young kid? What does that achieve?
Both ways. I just mean I can see why when you sort of said I could see why he's passionate, but then you like you said like what was it really going to achieve? They weren't going to like you know score 40 points in that.
It wasn't as if it was if it was an 8-point game where you know there's the 0.001% probability of an 8-point try that could get scored and you could tie the game up. Do you know what I mean? Like it was a blasting. So you've got to be upset with yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I agree.
Don't go and take it out on other people.
That Jason Saab try. Have you ever seen that guy in full flight live? My God, he just because that was on that again. That was on our side, and he just like his legs. He takes 2 meters per step when he's in full sprint. And you know, I think it looked like did he poke the tongue out of one of the Manly players? I believe when he was running.
No, I didn't see that.
No, but like, no, I don't think it was. No one was catching him. I think it was to, I think it was to Tapia. He was just running. He just went like that on the side.
Yeah, right.
And but my God, the guy, like,
I seen him up here a couple of weeks ago try and chop down the hammer. And the hammer, yeah, in the Seagulls game with the Cowboys up here in the last round of the regular season, yeah. And that was coming towards our end, and he chopped him down pretty easy, but you know Tabu Ifedo sort of fended him off and ended up scoring in the corner. So yeah, I've seen him definitely seen him in full flight.
He's got to be the quickest in the NRL. I think I watched the YouTube video the other day.
I would assume he is. There's sort of people, or you know, there's statistics around that guys like you know Addo Carr, Xavier Coates, you know, are close to what he can do. But I don't know if he is when they've clocked him, is he really pushing himself? He doesn't look like it.
I don't think so. He doesn't look like it. But see again,
because he knows he can catch anybody.
NRL, bring back the rule that we want, that where we just have one player from each team and then they race.
Bring it back.
I don't get it. Fans would
bring
go crazy.
It back. It'd be a foregone conclusion. This. But and in saying that, not to say that Saab wouldn't be able to sort of beat everybody, but you know that you'd have 14 representatives. I think it'd be a fairly easy win for Saab.
I think so. Look, good win by Manly. They move on. And then, yeah, well, I guess we'll just see how they go up against South next week.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, that's a very hard tantalizing matchup next week against the Rabbitohs, fully rested. And yeah, we'll see how that sort of pans out. Yeah, everything sort of shifts back to Brisbane now, so no more regional games anymore. Basically, you know, after these two games, we've only got three more games of football left for the rest of the year. So that's a little disappointing to know that we don't have any test matches or like last year we still had three Origins. So that's going to be a little bit bittersweet after the 3rd of October.
The second game, yeah, look, Panthers Panthers won 8-6.
My God,
it was an interesting game to watch on ground.
Brutal, like holy moly, like just some brutal hits. Like Penrith just came out all guns blazing in that first 15 minutes of defense. Just kept Parramatta down their own end. Parramatta, you know, Moses is constantly kicking, you know, from at least he's behind his own 30, you know, and he's got a booming boot on him, but they put Parramatta on the back foot from the get-go, and it took a little while for them to sort of work themselves into the game after the Panthers sort of whether or not they sort of gassed themselves out a little bit, but they really tried to put the hurt on early in that game, and it was successful to a degree.
Yeah, and you know, I guess speaking of those hits, the same sort of thing, you could hear them on ground pretty
That would have been thumping.
Again, seeing these guys warm up, especially the Penrith forwards, Fisher Harris and Moses Leota. God, like, they're
even Kickow is a monstrous human being.
They're not tall, but they're so big.
No, that's not
Kickow's tall. Kickow's giant.
And James Fisher Harris, to me, they're sort of in the mold of someone like Matty Scott or someone like that. They're not super tall, but they're wide.
Yeah, I was very tall. I noticed him up close. He's very, very tall. Extremely tall. But he's a consistent player. But look, it was kind of a slugfest. They Manly sort of first try to whack a Blake. What'd you think?
Oh my god, that was such a bad ball for Dylan Edwards to try and take, and it just took an off break turn towards the try line, and you're like, oh no, after all of that pressure that Penrith just applied, and essentially the first time that Parramatta get out of their own end, and he doesn't take the kick on the full, and Blake scores, and you're like, oh boy, like
it's a great try. I'm in the back.
Oh, unbelievable. Luck.
Yeah. Of course.
That's super luck, and you've got to take in the finals arena, you've got to capitalize on that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was. And look, I mean, really, you can sort of say the next thing, a couple of key errors from Manly, Nathan Brown and then Will Panisi's error that led to Catewell's second try, same sort of, situation. It was almost like a carbon copy. Then it was a captain's challenge as well. Like, it was just, it felt like a real carbon copy of what was happening.
No, it's right. And it was just, it was really weird too. Like off the Dylan Brown drop, it was a bit of a bold challenge. Like, he picked the ball up out of dummy half and just sort of re-gripped it. And the referee straight up just called a knock on, and he's adamant. Yeah. No, that ball didn't hit the ground. I don't know how he's supposed to know that. All it's got to do is touch a blade of grass, and you're not going to feel that.
Unless he's got his hand underneath.
He had his hands on the side of the ball, so that's such a bold challenge for them to take and to win, just to try and keep the ascendancy.
Exactly. And it's funny, sort of straight after, or not sort of straight after that, but it – After that try, like, it was weird. There was errors and penalties and the amount of interchanges that happened, that you could just tell it must have been brutal, because there was so many people going on and off in that last 20. It was ridiculous.
A nice little free interchange for a head knock here, HIA assessment there. Is it really eight interchanges? Like, please.
Well, no, it was technically, I counted them up, so it was technically four. Four legitimate interchanges. The rest were
exactly.
Free or HIA. So, up until sort of that, what did you think? I mean, there's a lot of things happened in the second half, but just before the second half, where Nathan Cleary had that penalty shot. It looked like, from where I was, a dangerous tackle. I know what you sort of thought, because I couldn't.
I mean, I didn't think there was much in it. The Will Smith high shot. There's not much in that, honestly. There's really not much in that. He's not so much that it's even bounced up and hit him on the chin or anything. It didn't catch him flush on the chin or anything like that. I thought that could have been let go.
I mean, from what we, and that's probably the one thing about regional games, is the big screen TVs aren't very, they're not friendly. Spectator friendly, that's the word. So we couldn't see much, but I mean, it was obviously glaringly obvious when the penalty was blown. Of course, they were going to take the 2 points. I mean,
oh yeah,
it was a fair way out, but he had no choice. I mean, Yeah. So
right on half time. And to be fair as well, like, you know, they had just done an absolute mountain of defense, you know, not 5 or 6 minutes before that, where Parramatta are just constant. I think they had like 4 sets in a row on Penrith's try line, could not get over. So, you know, the defensive effort by both of these teams, it was unbelievable. And that's for me, this is where the game sort of really started to get interesting, was, yeah, just towards the back end of that first half, where Parramatta are giving Penrith their absolute best shots, and Penrith kept repelling them. I'm pretty sure it was like 4 sets in a row. And then, you know, that high shot by Will Smith, it was a little bit of a sort of pressure relief to break the deadlock. Yeah. Ultimately, you know, they're not to know that that's going to decide the game. But I just thought that was a little bit of a, you know, pressure relief there to break up the 6-6. You know, Penrith going up at 8-6 at halftime and you know, really sort of have to catch their breath after all the defense they've just done, you know, not too long before that. And it would have been, you know, and I don't know if it sort of felt on TV that halftime went for a little bit longer than what a regular sort of halftime would. I'm sure it would have been much like up here. It would have been nice and warm and humid there as well.
A little bit. I mean, it was a weirdly sort of cool weather, you know, I guess for September, so to speak. So
it has been, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess, like, it, you know, it didn't seem like it went, obviously, when you're there, it didn't seem like it was long, but, it could be a lot of sort of reasons, I guess. But, I couldn't tell, but when you're sort of there live, it didn't seem like it was a long second.
When you line it up at the bar, like, you know, you want halftime to go as long as humanly possible so you don't miss out on anything.
Yeah, well, that is true. That is true. And I wasn't
lining up for the whether they're lining up for the toilet.
I wasn't chancing anything of if it was going to run out or not, because I was grabbing 4 at a time. So.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, that's. Oh, you don't grab 4 at a time. Rookie mistake, son. Rookie mistake.
No, at the start I didn't, and then I just realised I better grab 4.
Four at a time is a must.
The second half, I can't work out. So in the first 10 minutes of that second half, Penrith had 3 interchanges in the first 10 minutes. They just had a break, by the point you're saying, an extended break, and they did 3 interchanges. Coruscant come off, Kikau come off, and Pangai Jr. come off in the space. I can't work it out.
Pangai Jr., what a bludger he is. Please.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, I just don't get, like, they just had a break and then you're off in the first 10 minutes. I don't get that and then they obviously, then they come back towards the end. So that seems to be, you know, I guess
If you can stretch your interchanges out and, you know, get yourself some nice free interchanges by, you know, some head high tackles and, oh, here we go, you know, we can take ourselves a free interchange because somebody's been put on report and we don't have to use our own, then that's 100%. I don't care. Yeah, it's pretty obvious that has been, I think, a major sort of blight on the year this season with just the interchange rule and how I get it. It's a result of foul play and it's a free interchange, but the amount of just weak ass, you know, little chin grazing, you know, if you had a little bit of nostril hair coming out of your nose and somebody hit that across your face, then that's class as a head high tackle. And you get put where you get put on report and it's a free interchange. It's like, oh my God, it's almost like the crusher tackle. Like it's the biggest have in the game at the moment, the crusher tackle. It's the biggest con that's going around in the game at the moment.
Yeah, it's fair.
Clearly, judging it in this game.
No, that's fair. Well, I was about to say.
No more brilliant example than Blake Ferguson.
I was about to say, are you talking about Blake Ferguson's?
Oh, my God.
Like he got a pincer in his of his neck and then all of a sudden jumped up.
There wasn't even any pressure on his neck.
I don't get it. It was hilarious seeing him get up.
It was as if it was Alex McKinnon. He's got a broken neck and he can't move. Like that's a poor example, but it was unbelievable. It was like oh my God, like he might actually be really hurt here. And then you see the replay and I've had more whiplash by putting the brakes on in my car than what happened. And then all of a sudden the whistle blows. And he springs to life like he's in the Ninja Turtles video game after he's eaten some pizza. He just springs up off the earth and it's like, holy moly, where did that come from?
I mean we couldn't hear anything, but I would have loved to know what said that made him sort of spark up. Maybe someone just caught him a cat or something. Like get
you
up.
Couldn't, your cat. On the broadcast you couldn't hear anything, but there was obviously that something was said. And man, I ain't ever seen somebody get off the ground that quick. Woo!
No, it was
Oh, it was a con job. Come on.
Of course it was. It was dumb. It was absolutely dumb. And like you said, it was that. There was also, I mean, probably the most telling point of this game where a coach decided to, I guess, effectively win the game for Penrith by trying to stop the flow of the Eels towards the end there.
Well, that is a brilliant con job towards the end of the game. So the rule is that, you know, a trainer has to come on, assess the player, you know, check them out, see what's happening before he can essentially flag the referee down to get play stopped. It was Mitch Kenny. And it was not to say it was only an ankle injury, but it was an ankle injury. It wasn't a head knock or anything of that. We get it. It was at the back of the play. Parramatta had just got the ball back off a set off a dropout, and they are well and truly on the attack. Well and truly on the attack, and they had been for probably the previous 10 minutes. Like there was a break by Mitchell Moses that he was cut down by Jerome Luai, that mm-hmm. they were really getting the upper hand, and the trainer has just bolted straight onto the field, not even worried about what the injury is to Mitch Kenny, and flagged the referee down straight away, and they stopped it, which is just, it's, I mean, again, a con.
Well, it felt like, just looking at, you could sort of see him. He was mixing in the play, Mitch Kenny being down, but it was his con as well. I think he intentionally sort of stayed down longer than he needed to be completely honest.
But it's and then that sort of stuff's been happening all year as well because they know exactly that they can exploit that rule, especially when teams are on the attack. You know, if they're stumbling around a little bit, or you know that they've been left behind in the play, then the attacking side might get one or two tackles, and especially if they're in their own 20, or you know, if they're defending in on their own try line, then it's absolutely a tactic. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, I get it. It's just unfortunately an exploitation of the player welfare part of the game, and that's terrible to say, but that's just what's happening.
Probably true. I mean, you can tell obviously it. You know, I'm talking about Brad Arthur's press conference after the game. He obviously clearly said it felt like an exploitation of the rule. I mean, he said a lot of other choice things during that. He wasn't a happy boy at all.
The funny thing is, shoe on the other foot, it's the exact same situation.
Exactly. You'd do the same thing.
Yeah,
true.
It's true. I guess he doesn't really want to turn into a Trent Robinson, Mr. Complainy Pants. You know, everything goes wrong for the Roosters. Boo hoo hoo. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, poor Roosters. You know, we've only won 1,000 premierships in the last 10 years. Like where? You know, get the F over yourself. Like you've had a rotten year with injury. You're still finished, well entrenched in the top eight. you've been rolled. Just deal with it.
That's exactly right, and that was it. That's exactly right.
It is unfortunate for Brad Arthur to sort of, you know, for him and his side for the season end like that, but that they can, I guess they can sort of, you know, take some sort of pride and just out of the last few weeks that they had in the season where, you know, the wheels were completely falling off. They had the win against the Cowboys, and they come out and sprung it on the Storm, and that sort of really got them back on track.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were well
in this game. You know, the huge chance to win. It's probably nearly their best game all year, even going down as a losing side. So that's right.
And I think too, like, you know, once it did come down, like, and who's to say that Parramatta would have scored, you know, if the game hadn't have been stopped? Because to me, it looked like they were running on empty.
Yeah,
they were totally running on empty. And my absolute 100% favorite commentator, Michael Lennis, flapping his lips about, oh, yeah, Dylan Brown, he's got to come out and he's got to be the one to take a hold of this game and by the scruff of the neck and try and win it. It's just like, do you hear yourself? Dylan Brown, he wants Dylan Brown to step up and take this game by the scruff of the neck and win it for Parramatta. Really? You don't want Mitchell Moses? You don't want your representative halfback? You don't want Click Gutherson? No, you want Dylan Brown to step up?
What I found that they didn't do in this game is they didn't utilize Isaiah Papali'i enough. He was only on the game for 30 minutes. I'm not sure what was going on.
And the funny thing is what Brad Arthur's done in the 2 weeks of the finals is he's brought Sean Lane on and played him in the second row, the starting second row, and dropped Papali'i to the bench. And then this week he had Ryan Madison come back. And again, that's a pretty good, you know, 1-2 punch off the bench is having Papali'i and Ryan Madison. But it's a selection dilemma, but I thought that, yeah, you've been running with that combination all year of Lane, well, most of the year with Lane off the bench and Papali'i in the starting side. So it was a bit of a strange one why the last couple of weeks, last week against Newcastle and this week against Penrith, why he would go with Sean Lane, you know, in that starting second row spot, I guess, to sort of the Papali'i's been one of the best second rowers, if not the best second rower in the game this year.
I go, and yeah, 100%. By
so
the,
it doesn't make any sense why you take him off
when he runs the ball. It didn't. It just yeah, it didn't make sense. But that's their year over. Penrith will move on and play Melbourne next week. A replay of the grand final.
Anybody that had bet slips of grand final repeat could tear those up.
Yeah, well, grand final repeat, but only in the semi-finals. That's all I got.
Yeah, grand final repeat in the grand final. But yeah, everybody can tear those bet slips up. That was not me, but I think that's what a lot of people would have been, you know, putting a bit of a splash on to have a grand final repeat, but not to be. It's going to be a grand final qualifier for those two, so that should be a very interesting game. If Penrith can't muster up. They've scored two tries in 2 weeks of the finals.
Mm-hmm.
They got a couple of penalty goals in the game last week against South up here in Townsville. Only scored the one try and a penalty goal this week. If they can't score more than one try against Melbourne next week, that's going to be a very tough afternoon for them.
Yeah.
Very tough afternoon for them because Melbourne's got plenty of points in them.
And they like to get out of the box early too.
No, that's right. And if their scoreboard pressure, like there was last week against South, it didn't look like Penrith handled that. We said it last week. I don't think they handled that scoreboard pressure very well. And even though it was only one score, I just don't think they played a very rushed second half and probably last 20 minutes last week. If that happens against Melbourne, it's shut the gate.
Yeah. It will be shut the gate. So, Finishing up on this week, we'll do our studs and duds. I mean, if we're starting with a dud, it was none other than Blake Ferguson's Maragetti. I mean, is it too obvious? Yeah, I mean, what the hell?
I mean, it is.
I've never seen it this year.
It's unbelievable. Like, it just... How did he think he was going to get away with that and not get criticized? You know what I mean? Like, you know, if it's ridiculous. Like, that's just not. Well,
he's no longer playing with them now, so.
No, well, that's right. You know, he's on the hunt for a club. So,
But you'll be. I mean, you know, thing aside.
Somebody'll grab him. Like, he's still a very, yeah, he's an experienced and more than a serviceable first grade winger.
Yeah. 100%. So, my stud was not a little bit left field, but just for the Roosters, it was half of Roosters and half of Mackay. Just a nice send off. A lot of us stayed around because obviously they were lining up the two teams of Manly and the Roosters, and just a lot of people stayed around on our side of the grandstand just to clap off John Morris for him retiring. That was his last.
Yeah, look, not the best of situations for Josh to retire, but
Josh, not John. My God, Cronulla. Whoops, Josh.
But he retired a few years ago. And he doesn't have a coaching job anymore.
So, yeah.
That's always a good gesture. Like we did it up here. For two ones that I remember up here with the Cowboys ending two great Broncos careers in 2004 when the Cowboys beat the Broncos up here. I think it was 10-0 in that game in 2004. Pretty sure it was a David Miles try in that game as well. Anyway, that was the end of Gordon Tallis's career. So they retired Gordon Tallis here in Townsville. Another
which is
one
kind of the perfect send off for him, at least. That's right. Not the greatest send off, but like being a Townsville boy, obviously.
No, that's right. So. You know, it could have come in a worse spot. And also as well, like the crowd hung around for when again the Cowboys up here beat the Broncos in the finals, and ended Corey Parker's career. So, you know, that's two. And you know, obviously it's still a big Broncos town up here, you know, always has, always will be.
And that's and my it was, point.
I just thought that, yeah, both of those, especially in, you know, in that finals environment, for every, basically everybody to still hang around and do the same thing, you know, and really give, a standing ovation and to acknowledge the career of two greats. That aren't part of this club.
Point here. Like, there's no, you know, if it was a Cowboy or Broncos team, completely different thing. But this is a Sydney team.
That just shows it's just good.
That's what I'm saying.
It just shows that Mackay's got rugby league smarts. They know the people in the game. Like, they're not just, you know, flippant fans or anything like that.
They knew who he is. So that was a good send off. So that was my start of the week.
Yeah, look, and once again, it's an unfortunate way for him to go out, and you know, now both Morris twins have retired, so the Roosters are going to have to go on a bit of a recruiting drive to sort of
to get some. We talk about them in the off season. They're a little bit in trouble. To be completely honest,
they've got Uncle Nick Politis has got a lot of work to do this off season.
He definitely does.
So, look, for me, my start of the week was that second game, was Parramatta and Penrith. Like, that just goes to show, you know, a scoreline of 8-6, the lowest scoring game all year, just goes to show that you don't need an absolute points fest to be entertained by rugby league.
I will say, out of all four teams, Parramatta's the most, probably celebrated team in Mackay. There was more, out of all four teams, there was more Para fans and more cheers and boos than all the other three teams. There was Para jerseys everywhere. Penrith, not so much. But even the Roosters Manly game, it wasn't, you know, there was more vocal para fans. So there was
interest. Well, they had Canberra up there early this year as well.
Yeah. But again, there was more Eels jerseys. I mean, some of them are Eels jerseys from, you know, 19, when they won last, when 1982.
What, 1986?
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was a lot more vocal.
You gotta hang on to those Sterlo glory days.
You could just tell they respected how great that game was, that it was low scoring, but it was again, I don't know if it's because there was more para fans. It was more vocal. It was like 200 more people. That shouldn't make a difference. But that game was more vocal than the first game, and the first game was a try fest. But it was definitely more vocal. I'm telling you now.
Yeah, but it's all well and good for it to be a try fest, but it's a try fest for one supporter base.
Hmm.
So, you know, when it's a little bit more back and forth, you know, if that game was close, to say if it was 24-20.
Yeah, when it's a close game, it's always a bit more vocal, I suppose, too.
That's, I mean, you've only got one lot of fans, you know, cheering, and the other lot of fans sort of, you know, sitting back on their heels a little bit. So, I guess just one more sort of thing before we go. I'm not sure what you think about what the NRL are doing this year with the Dally M's, how they're stretching it out over 2 weeks, not just 2 nights, 2 weeks, and giving us, I guess, a little bit of a taste of things to come for the second night to announce that the Dally M and Team of the Year. But, you know, a gimmick. So to speak, for the first night. I don't know what you think, but I don't like it. It's a gimmick.
It's a gimmick. It is a gimmick. I'm not disputing that. It feels a little bit like you know, like say Academy Awards or Oscars, where you get the nominations and then you wait for all that time, and then all the awards come out. Similar to this, you're sort of finding out what's happening in dribs and drabs up until.
To me, though, it takes a little bit of the drama away from the Dally M, because they're already given you the 5 Dally M chances, right? Like, you know, the 5 Dally M players that have a genuine chance. When they're being named, there's always somebody who comes out of the blue at the end of the season. This has just given that away straight away.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's, you know, no, what I mean? There's,
like,
no,
you know, it could be somebody like Nathan Cleary who missed 4 or so weeks throughout the middle of that season, or, you know, after the Origin period, where he's obviously not scoring points, and then, you know, he could rocket up the leaderboard. Someone like Cody Walker, who to me I think is going to be, I think he's going to get it. I think that the end of the season,
really,
I think he's going to fly through and sneak past Trbojevic. That's a big call. Like, Trbojevic looks like he's got it in the bag, but
possibly. But who
I
knows?
He's scoring. I just think that Cody Walker could have a sneaky shot to sort of come through at the end of the season, and you know, he would have been scoring a lot of Dally M points in those South Sydney wins towards the end of the season. Well, I think he could be there or thereabouts. He'll finish above Nathan Cleary.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it'll be Trbojevic, Walker, Cleary, 1, 2, 3. But yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Cody Walker pips Trbojevic at the end.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to watch it no matter what. But you're right. It feels a little bit gimmicky. I don't know if they're trying to build anticipation or what they're doing, but
Well, they know they can't have anybody there, can they?
No, they can't. So that's probably
it's a made for television type thing. It's almost going to be, like you said, like the Oscars from the last year, where it's just like weird, you know, Zoom screens everywhere as they do nominations and stuff. And that's cringeworthy.
That's what it's going to be, and this is what it felt like. You found out like who the top 5 are, like the 5 nominations. That's what I mean. Yeah. It felt very like
boring.
And yeah,
like you said, they're trying to create a little bit of a tease and a little bit of anticipation. But now we already know who the top 5 are. So when they start the count at round whatever it is, 18 or whatever, and you already see the names that are up on the board, you already know who the 5 genuine contenders are going to be.
Exactly. Exactly right. Yeah. No. Not. I mean, again, we'll watch it, but it's not. It's not very. Yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of it. I like seeing the points, or hearing. I mean, you're not going to hear it this year, obviously, but hearing. You know, when you hear someone get 3 points and a crowd react when they get 3 points, I always loved hearing that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Because that's, I mean, there's a contingent of crowd there, plus the players, you know, when they used to have it. I think it was the Sydney Town Hall when they used to, recently they have it at like Town Hall, and it's not a huge crowd. There'd be a couple of hundred people up in the top section, but you know, mainly it's the players that are there. But they've got to try something. They've got to try and do what they can, because the eight sets of teams have gone home. You know, travel is limited between Queensland and New South Wales, so I guess it's not limited. I guess it's basically non-existent. So a lot of teams have already gone home back to Sydney. So it's just one of those things where they've just got to try and make do with what they've got.
Wow. Nice way to finish. Don't forget, we've got our socials, Facebook and Twitter, where you'll get all our links to all our podcasts. As always, we're also on Eureka or gimco.com.au, all your sporting cards needs.
Yeah, they're going crazy at the moment. Gimco's going nuts because the AFL Grand Final's on next week as well. So they've got Supremacy still being sold. They've got the new product out there. I think it's called Optimum. And that stuff's just sort of flying off the shelves, and they're doing break after break after break. I guess that generally what happens, you know, in anticipation for the AFL Grand Final. So everybody's going sort of gangbusters for that as well on Eureka Sports Cards and gimco.com.au. So shout out to those boys. You know, good luck to the Western Bulldogs and the Demons who are in the AFL Grand Final. So that'll be interesting to see next week. We'll have two, you know, blockbuster preliminary finals in the NRL next week, so
yeah,
they should be. Huge and game. It's a bit funny too. They've brought forward the kickoff to the Melbourne and Penrith game, so they can, I guess, Victorian fans can watch it and then switch over and watch the AFL Grand Final.
And that's how they've positioned it. So
I mean that's fair enough.
That's what I mean. That's the way it is. So that's it. We'll bring NFL one out soon for week one NFL, and then obviously we'll have another NRL and then another NFL, so they're going to come pretty thick and fast.
The NFL is oh my god, it's back.
Red zone is back.
Oh my god, it's so good.
It is good, and I found a way to put it through to the TV, so I'm sweet every Monday morning now. So
yeah, it's awesome.
Have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. Let's go, Storm. Please, Smith. Please.
like we said, I think that's going to be a bit of an epic game next week. So
yeah, both games.
Both games should be good. But I'll just cap off, I guess, with I'll sign off as Miles. Yay, football plum. So. I've got no more horses in the race, so yay, let's go football. So it should be good next week, and then the grand final on October 3. So yeah, a little bit bittersweet as the pointy end of the season is the here and now. But the next two games in Brisbane, at Suncorp, and then obviously the grand final at Suncorp too. So should be good.
All right. Have a good day or week, everyone. See ya.
Good week.